are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hopefully you have had an awesome start to your week so far. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. I had chocolate mousse and chocolate coconut almond this weekend. They were both phenomenal. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Today, we are joining a new network-wide series, Franchise What Ifs. Each team across the Locked On NBA network, and actually, I think all of the Locked On networks, not just the NBA, are focusing on franchise what ifs both this week and next week. So that'll be the focus of our next few episodes. And there are, of course, many franchise what ifs for the Timberwolves, especially in the last, 20 years or so. So we'll take a look through Wolves history to find the biggest what ifs and find out what decisions, were made for the better or for the worse, and could have been flipped on their ear if the Wolves had done something different. First, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. So full disclosure on this list, it is going to be pretty much, as I mentioned already, the last 20-ish years, I guess really 25 years. The first few years in Wolves history, first of all, I was very, very small, so I don't remember the first few years of Wolves history. However, there also wasn't a whole lot going on in terms of, major player transactions. There was nobody that, is really of all that much note on the team. There's obviously J.R. Ryder, and there were a few guys, Pooh Richardson, players who were good, Sam Mitchell, over the first few years, but nobody that was, there were no major acquisitions. There were no major controversial draft selections. The Christian Laettner pick was exciting at the time, ended up not being great for the Timberwolves. Not really a whole lot to talk about in terms of what ifs, or at least that I'm aware of. And if I'm off base, someone let me know. But I couldn't find anything that was probably worth spending too much time talking about from the first couple of years in Wolves history related to what ifs. So I'm going to start with a really obvious one, and this will probably be the shortest one that we talk about in the series. The most obvious potential what if the Minnesota Timberwolves do not take Kevin Garnett in 1995. And I guess that starts with if Kevin McHale and Flip Saunders don't have that private workout with Kevin Garnett in Chicago. Remember, they had not necessarily planned on taking him until shortly before the draft. And doing a little bit of research, I did find an article from Sam Smith, who, of course, has gained a little bit of notoriety with maybe younger fans who didn't know who he was, with his prominence early in the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary on ESPN. He was at the time a Chicago Tribune columnist and wrote a piece, had to have been one of the first mock drafts that was really out there. So I actually found a 1995 mock draft. If you Google that, you'll find this. And Sam Smith talked about, this was just in the days leading to the draft, actually did predict that the Timberwolves would take Kevin Garnett, which surprised me because I know at the time it was a little bit surprising that the Wolves were taking a high school guy at number five. But in that article, he notes that that was also the surprise rise was Garnett getting to that point. He essentially crafted this mock draft, Sam Smith did, from talking to different GMs in the pre-draft process. And so other teams figured out the Wolves were on to Garnett. But there was that infamous workout, Garnett for Saunders and McHale. Saunders at the time was just in the front office. He was not the head coach. McHale obviously was also in the front office. And the Wolves knew from that point forward they're going to take Garnett at number five. And they were pretty sure he'd be there, but they weren't positive. As it turned out, Joe Smith went number one. And then, of course, he ends up with the Wolves. More about him later. Antonio McDyess went second. Jerry Stackhouse third. Rasheed Wallace fourth. So four really good players actually went before Garnett. Obviously, if this draft were redone, Garnett's the number one pick without question. But the four guys that were picked ahead of him all had long careers, 15 or more years. They were all good players in the NBA. And yet the Wolves got Garnett at five. So I guess if they don't do that workout, if they don't see him play, if they choose to draft someone else, I found a couple other mock drafts at the time. One had Garnett going at six, and I forget who else they had in the top. I think Ed O'Bannon maybe going in the top three, and McDyess would have gone to the Wolves. I think McDyess was often mocked in that general area, so McDyess could have been an option if he'd fallen. If the Wolves would have gotten cold feet and knocked if the top four picks play out how they did. And the Wolves got cold feet on taking a high school player, the first high school player drafted in 20 years. Of course, this is what, you know, this is history being made here. Kobe Bryant was the next year. Tracy McGrady, you know, a bunch of this kind of opened the floodgates. Bryant Reeves went six. I don't know if the Wolves are all that interested in Bryant Reeves. Maybe Damon Stoudemire at seven. At this point, the Wolves don't have Stephon Marbury, so maybe they would have taken Damon Stoudemire, who, of course, had a pretty good career himself. Ed O'Bannon maybe would have been a possibility. He had a very short career. That probably would have been the only other direction they would have considered going. It would have been Ed O'Bannon or Damon Stoudemire had they not decided to go with Garnett at number five. That said, I think this what-if really hinges on the private workout that Garnett did. It really sounds like, and I think Saunders gave interviews to this effect after the fact, that after that workout, the Wolves knew 100% they were going to take Kevin Garnett. So I think that that's the real what-if. If they were to have gotten cold feet, I think it's probably Antonio McDice. If he slid, I guess, since he didn't, it likely would have been a player like Ed O'Bannon, and perhaps Damon Stoudemire would have been an option too. So that's the most obvious what if in Timberwolves history. Before we get into the second what if in Timberwolves history, also of that same era, I wanted to talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. I had a Built Bar this weekend. I went hiking for about 3 hours, which is a long hike for me. But you know, beautiful weather, the whole been inside a lot lately thing. So went hiking and brought some Built Bars with me. I had the chocolate coconut almond after my hike, and it was, I don't know if it's because I was exhausted and tired or if it was my favorite flavor so far, but to this point, I'm saying that's my favorite flavor that I've tried, the chocolate coconut almond, and it really helped fill me up just the right amount. You don't eat too much right after you go hiking or you'll feel terrible, and that was the perfect amount to get me on my hour drive back home. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. There are 16 amazing flavors. There's 8 chocolate nut flavors and 8 chocolate nut-free flavors. I also, this weekend, had the chocolate mousse, so that's obviously the nut-free, one of the nut-free ones. Really, really good. But the chocolate nut almond, or the chocolate almond coconut, which obviously is one of the chocolate nut flavors, fantastic. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. They're perfect if you're health conscious, you're trying to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. The chocolate coconut almond flavor, or the profile for that bar, is 130 calories, 18 grams of protein, 7 grams of fiber, and just 3 grams of sugar. And again, was absolutely and completely delicious. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. I highly recommend it. Again, builtbar.com, promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your very first order. All right, what if number two on our list? And again, we're doing this all week and into next week. We'll dive a little bit deeper on a couple of these. So there's a few more to come, but number two, kind of going in chronological order here throughout Timberwolves history. What if the Timberwolves do not trade Ray Allen immediately after drafting him the following year in 1996? The Timberwolves drafted Ray Allen at number five immediately after the Milwaukee Bucks picked Stephon Marbury at number four. The top three picks in that draft were Allen Iverson, Marcus Camby, Sharif Abdur-Rahim. Again, all really good players. And then Stephon Marbury went to the Bucks at four. They obviously knew the Timberwolves coveted pairing a young point guard with a young big man. Remember, this was right after Garnett's rookie year. The Wolves still had not been a playoff team. I think they won 26 games in Garnett's rookie year. And so the Wolves picked Ray Allen at five and then turned around and flipped Ray Allen and a first-round pick for the next season to the Bucks for Stephon Marbury. Ultimately, which sounds terrible, ultimately what happened was the Wolves got that pick back from the Bucks for, I think it was Andrew Lang, who is more of a journeyman center than anything else, but had split the previous year between the Wolves and another team, had a pretty good season, and the Bucks took him back for in exchange for that first-round pick. So effectively, the Wolves traded Ray Allen and Andrew Lang for Stephon Marbury. However, given the fact there was a first-round pick initially included, that shows just how much the Wolves coveted Marbury and also how much the Bucks thought of Andrew Lang to then give up a first-round pick for him. So no matter how you slice it, the Wolves certainly were on the wrong side of this one. The history of Stephon Marbury with the Wolves, if you're listening to this, you probably know how things went down. But basically, after a year and a half in Minnesota, for some combination, or actually 2.5 years in Minnesota, Marbury's made some comments in the media. There were actually some pretty recent comments that he made related to not wanting to die in the cold in Minnesota, and also some of the cultural things in Minnesota. Low African-American population was one of the reasons he cited, and there were a few reasons why he gave for not wanting to be in Minnesota. I think certainly all of those things could play into that. However, there was certainly a little bit of tug of war over who was going to be the alpha on this team between Marbury and Garnett. And Garnett, around the time or just prior to the trade, had gotten that massive contract extension to that point, a record contract extension in NBA history. And Garnett, of course, was one of the reasons, that contract was at least, that the NBA entered into that lockout in 99. But Marbury spent 2.5 years in Minnesota, basically forced his way out mid-season 98-99. The Wolves traded him and got Terrell Brannon, a really good player, and actually fit pretty well with what the Wolves were trying to do alongside Garnett. Obviously, the ceiling is nowhere near as high with Terrell Brannon in the prime of his career than Marbury, who's ascending to the prime of his. And as it turned out, Marbury ended up just having, you know, a nice career, but he was always kind of a volume scorer. He made 2 All-Star teams, was out of the league by the time he was 31, basically was out of the league by the time he was 29-30, kind of winding down his career with the Knicks, and actually played with Garnett briefly in 2008-2009 with the Boston Celtics, and had a nice career for himself overseas in China, made a lot of money over there. But his game was just a high volume game. He shot a lot of threes, didn't make a lot of threes, and ended up just being kind of a high volume scorer. Still would have been a good fit with the Wolves, and maybe that turns out a little bit differently if he's able to run with Garnett and kind of harness some of that. Instead, the Wolves traded Ray Allen, who went on to be one of the best 3-point shooters in NBA history, set records with the Boston Celtics while he was there. And, you know, he bounced around a little bit. I mean, he spent 6 years in Milwaukee, and then he spent 4.5 years in Seattle, and 5 years in Boston before finishing his career with 2 seasons in Miami. But the Wolves would have at least had 3 or 4 seasons with Garnett and Allen together, even if they couldn't have extended both of them. And Ray Allen, by year 2, was a 20-point-a-game scorer, effectively, and was shooting, you know, he shot 39% from 3 in his first year, 36% his second year. It was year 4 before he hit 40%, but he was already an above-league-average shooter, always was. And pairing him with Garnett, obviously Flip Saunders' offense wasn't predicated on shooting a ton of threes, but nobody really was at that point in time, and Ray Allen would have found a way to shoot 4 threes a game, inevitably. And would have had a positive impact on the Wolves offense, been a better fit than a high usage guard like a Steph Marbury. Not like the Wolves had a ton of point guard options. And if they'd taken Ray Allen, they would have had to find a point guard somewhere else. So we have to acknowledge that. But pairing Allen and Garnett would have paired 2 future Hall of Famers and 2 superstars together immediately from the jump. I mean, Ray Allen would have been 21. Garnett would have only been, I think, 20 in his second year. And, even if you only get those 4 years together, I'm willing to bet that they get out of the first round of the playoffs. Even in year 1 with Marbury, the Wolves improved enough to be a playoff team, and they were from that point forward. From year 2 of Garnett all the way through, you know, the Western Conference Finals run, they were a playoff team. They were just a one-and-done playoff team. You put Allen on that team instead of Marbury, and I bet that turns out a little bit differently. And that's a massive what if, the fact that the Wolves actually drafted Ray Allen and then traded him in an asset for a guy who was picked right before them. It's actually mirrors a little bit, or the Wolves mirrored this a little bit in future years when they took Randy Foy, or they took Brandon Roy and traded him in cash for Randy Foy. That was also a Kevin McHale move. And, also a mistake. Again, Foy ended up having a longer career than Brandon Roy. But obviously, Brandon Roy was a superstar and a top probably 10 player in the game for a couple of years in there. And the Wolves are on the wrong end of another one of those, you know, player and asset for a player that had just gotten picked right before them on draft night. And clearly that's Kevin McHale, and in this case, Flip Saunders, falling in love with the player and everybody knowing that they want them. And so the Bucks said, well, we'll take Marbury a pick ahead of the Wolves and squeeze an asset out of him to get Ray Allen. And the Bucks won that trade. What if the Timberwolves had paired 2 All-Stars together in their early 20s, back in the mid-90s? Would the entire trajectory of this franchise be different if the Wolves had gotten to the second or third round earlier Would the Wolves have been able to hang on to both of those players? Would they have to pick between Allen and Garnett? Would they have traded Ray Allen? What could they have gotten in return for Ray Allen versus what they got in return for Steph Marbury? So many different directions that this could go in. Just a massive what if. Before we get into the third and final what if that we're going to talk about today, I wanted to talk about our friends at Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, and health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. I like Blinkist because you can use it on a 15-minute walk or run as you're trying to get out of the house here during your own self-quarantine. Listen to any one of a number of great books that they have available throughout the Blinkist platform. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. The other what if from just a year after that was the Joe Smith scandal. If you're not familiar with this, Smith, of course, was the number one overall pick in that 95 draft when Garnett went to the Wolves at number five. Came out after the 99-2000 season that the Wolves, owner Glenn Taylor and president of basketball ops Kevin McHale, had promised a future contract to Joe Smith if he had agreed to sign to a team for below market value for 3 years prior to that. So essentially, he was going to sign 3 1-year deals worth under $3 million a piece. And the Wolves gave him a wink, wink handshake. And apparently it was a little bit more than that. I think if I remember right, they actually put it on paper somewhere, which is probably what did him in. But they handshake agreement with Smith said that if he signs 3 smaller deals, he would get a multi-year, multi-million dollar deal later. And so after his second one, this came to light. And this was shortly after the lockout period. And so the salary cap obviously looked very different at the time, but this clearly was against the rules. The Wolves were penalized heavily. There was a suspension for McHale. There was essentially a suspension from Glenn Taylor. He basically couldn't participate in anything for a year. McHale took an unpaid suspension for about a year. And the Wolves were fined as an organization. It voided all of Smith's contracts and his bird rights. And so Smith actually went and signed with the Detroit Pistons. But the bigger what if here is, what if the Wolves had not lost any of their draft picks? They were stripped of their draft picks from 2001 to 2005, which is an unbelievably harsh penalty and obviously played a major role in the Wolves knocking it out of the first round basically through that entire time. Ultimately, the Wolves got back their pick in 2003, the one right in the middle. They got back. It's not like they used it wisely. We'll get to that here in a minute. But they lost their picks in 01, 02, 04, and 05. So 4 picks in 5 years. We're going to talk about the players that they could have gotten, that they theoretically could have drafted in each of those seasons, or each of those drafts, I should say. But I also want to point out that they also lose the ability to trade these picks. Not that the Wolves had traded. There wasn't a whole lot of packaging a pick with a player at the time, but they had that option. I mean, they initially traded a pick to get Steph Marbury, so they could have done that. And that's another way to look at this. Whether or not it's four rookies, because it's not like they had a solid draft record really outside of Garnett and Wally Szczerbiak, I guess. McHale didn't do a great job drafting late first-round picks, but that's 4 opportunities. Maybe they hit on one of them. Maybe they package one or two of them for in a larger trade to acquire a piece earlier than the summer of 03 when they acquired Cassell and Sprewell. But they lost the ability to do that too because of the scandal, and all for a Joe Smith, who's a solid role player. And part of the reason this was discovered is because it was a vast underpayment for a guy who was a legit starting big man in this league, kind of a swing big man who contributed defense and some rebounding and a little bit of scoring next to Garnett. And other teams would have paid him more. And that's why the Wolves did this. In 2001, the Wolves would have picked, I think they had like the seventh best record in the league. So they would have picked in the early 20s. Most likely, there's a few guys that went right before where the Wolves would have picked: Zach Randolph, Jason Collins, Brendan Haywood. I think the Wolves would have been in the 20 to 21 range. Not a whole lot of guys that went there. 25, though, is Jared Wallace. Sam Dellenberg went 13. Jamal Tinsley, 11. And Tony Parker went 28. I don't think anybody was on to Tony Parker except for the Spurs. So I'm not about to pretend the Wolves would have picked Tony Parker. But they could have gotten a Jared Wallace, who would have been a nice fit next to Kevin Garnett. They could have gotten a Sam Dellenberg, which would have been a better fit than ultimately Michael Olowokandi, who they were about to spend money on, or Irvin Johnson for that matter. In the NBA in that year, that would have been a good match. Or if Jason Collins had slid, if Zach Randolph had slid, I don't know that they take him because he's also a power forward, but Brendan Haywood would have been a great fit next to Garnett. And that hurts to not have that ability. The 2002 draft was one of the worst drafts in NBA history. Basically, outside of Yao Ming going number one, and you had Amari Stoudemire going 9, Nene was drafted 7th. There weren't very many good players in this draft. There's a couple guys that had long careers: Caron Butler, Tayshaun Prince. Actually, so Tayshaun Prince went 23rd. The Wolves would have picked probably right before then, so Prince would have been on the board. John Selmans went 26. There wasn't a whole lot else in the back half of the first round of this draft that would have been all that great. Kareem Rush was picked right around the same time as the Wolves took, or the Wolves would have picked. You know, he didn't have a great career, but he would have maybe been somebody the Wolves would have looked at to try and shore up the wing position. So they didn't miss out on a whole lot in this draft, but again, could have used it as trade capital as well. 2003 was the year that the Wolves got their pick back. I think Stern realized we can't completely tank this franchise for 5 years. Well, as it turned out, the Wolves tanked themselves with this pick. They took Indy Eby at 26. Of course, the high schooler trying to strike lightning in a bottle a second time. And Eby played in 19 games over 2 years and then was out of the league. The Wolves took him one pick before Kendrick Perkins, two picks before Leandro Barbosa, and three picks before Josh Howard. So three guys who were longtime regulars and solid contributors in the NBA. Perkins would have been a decent fit next to Garnett at the center spot. Barbosa would have been a fantastic fit on the wing. Josh Howard would have been great. Was a, you know, made an all-star team early in his career as the last pick in the first round. But the Wolves took into Eby. And that was the one pick they had over the span of 5 years, first round pick, I should say. I should also note that the Wolves didn't exactly strike gold with their second round selections during this time either. They did not have a good track record with their second round picks for the longest time. I think, that's a whole nother conversation. But the following year, 2004, the Timberwolves again would have picked in a similar spot. Jameer Nelson went number 20 in that draft. There were a few guys from 21 to 23 who didn't play more than 100 games or so in the league. Delonte West went 24, Tony Allen 25, Kevin Martin 26, Sasha Vujacic 27, Beno Udrih 28. So there was a bunch of guys in the 20s in this draft that ended up having long 10-plus season careers in the NBA. And all of them would have been better than not having a draft pick, as it turns out. No idea what the Wolves would have done. Again, in 2004, this is coming out of the Western Conference Finals. So the Wolves, didn't have as many holes to fill, but obviously knew that they only had a season left with Latrell Sprewell and weren't quite clear on Sam Cassell's injury issues. So Delonte West likely would have been an option on the wing. Tony Allen, Kevin Martin would have been options. They all would have been good options in one form or another if the Wolves had pulled the trigger on one of those deals. As it turned out, of course, Sprewell only had one more disappointing year in Minnesota and left during a contract dispute the following summer. And Sam Cassell was traded following an injury-riddled 2004-05 season and was traded to the Clippers, where he actually somewhat revived his career as much as he could at that point and was still a good player. But the Wolves, unfortunately, at that point, made the mistake to move him and did not have their draft pick to shore up either of those spots that summer. The following year, the Wolves actually did get their pick restored in 2005. So ultimately, the picks in 03 and 05 were returned. The Wolves, of course, took Rashad McCants, number 14. So that was not exactly the best selection at that moment in time, although he was a guy who was seen with a lot of upside, and the Wolves were hoping they could find a guy who could slide in next to Garnett and be a second scoring option. But that only preceded the Wolves trading Garnett to the Boston Celtics a couple years later. So ultimately, it was only three draft picks that the Wolves lost with the 03 and 05 picks returned. But the Wolves took NDEB and Rashad McCants with those picks, missed out on a couple of good drafts and also the ability to trade any of those picks to improve their current roster as it was. So this was a huge what if. And all of this for a solid role player, a borderline starter, rotation guy in Joe Smith, who was, you know, a good fit for their team, but certainly not worth giving up three draft picks, a fine, multiple suspensions, and just complete league-wide ridicule at the time. So a massive what if. What if the Wolves would have not given an under-the-table deal to Joe Smith? What if they would have been able to keep all of their first-round picks? As Garnett was at the peak of his powers, winning an MVP, the team went to the conference finals. Think about that team if the Wolves were able to carry forward a couple of other strong players instead of relying on the aging Cassell and Sprewell and then losing them effectively for nothing at the end of their time in Minnesota. As we get into the David Kahn era, there are a plethora of what ifs. And I know that that's not a surprise to anybody, but there are several what ifs that we can talk about related to David Kahn. Draft picks he made, trades that he made or didn't make, and also decisions, really, as we get into the Tom Thibodeau era, quite a few pretty recent ones, too. So we'll get into that as we go throughout the week and dive into a couple of these more specifically, some of the more interesting ones as we go through it here coming up very shortly. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit BuiltBar.com. Use promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first order. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.